This is Real Estate Journeys, episode 113.
So if they're scaling, that means they're already owning. If they're owning, I would, first of all, not rush to another metro and maybe try to go deeper, if possible, in the one that you're already investing in. Because a lot of people think like, oh, I'm going to diversify. And they don't realize when you diversify, that means another set of team, right? Another property management, maybe another realtor. Every time you add more people to your virtual organization, portfolio kind of organization, empire, then that's more noise in the system. So don't run to diversify. You already know that area. You probably have people that you trust and you can, you know, scale that. That's easier than just starting all over in another metro.
Welcome to Real Estate Journeys, here to help you build your cash-flowing real estate empire that you've been dreaming of. This is about real estate investors who have escaped the soul-crushing 9-to-5 rat race by taking action, leveraging relationships, and gaining the financial independence. It's time to stop making excuses and get the insight and knowledge you need to become a successful real estate investor. This is your host, Matthew Baltzell.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is your boy, Matty B, aka Matthew Baltzell. Welcome back to Real Estate Journeys, the exclusive podcast for real estate investors looking to scale to 100 units and live that location independent lifestyle. And guys, I'm excited for today's episode because we have a very interesting guest. His name is Danny Bates, or he is a fellow international world-renowned traveler, but he's also started his investing journey all the way from the other side of the world, from Israel. He's got a really cool story. He started investing when he was 26. He's former special forces, and he's done over 100 residential flips, and he's very knowledgeable in real estate. So with all that said, I'd like to welcome Danny to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. That's awesome.
Glad to be here. Man. Yeah.
Excited.
Yeah. So I mentioned briefly in the bio, you're from Israel, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So how did you go about starting even thinking about investing in the United States? Did you have roots in the United States? Did you have a grandma? Did you have, like, how did you begin to conceptualize it? Wanting to start investing in the United States?
Kind of an awkward roots, I would say. Not exactly roots in the traditional way. When I was in high school, my dad was military. He was positioned in Washington, D.C. for 2 years as a military attaché. And that got my kind of roots, or where I fell in love with the U.S. Something intrigued me. It was very quick. 2 years, I think it kind of polished my English. So for me, gave me a little bit of a taste, but that's as much of the roots as I have. The real estate, you know, came much later, maybe 10 years later, when I was already after the military service and after getting my engineering degree. And out of pure necessity and realization, what an awesome, you know, ecosystem the real estate has to offer individuals here. I haven't checked most of the world, but I haven't seen anything like it anywhere else. It's amazing. We take it for granted. I'm in the U.S. now, right? I live in the U.S. now for the past 17 years. We take it for granted, the stuff that we have here as investors. I have clients from Israel. They want to get a bite of it. It's much more difficult from what you and I, as Americans, never easy, but relatively easy to other people who are trying to come here and invest.
Yeah, for sure. One of the good things about the United States is, like, our loans are what, 3.5%, like house hacking, refinancing, like there's all these options, you know. In countries like Asia and stuff, you have to put a lot more money down. There's not these refinancing options. People live in their homes until they die, right? They hold them for like 50, 60, 70 years. It's harder to flip. So there's definitely more opportunity, more access to capital. So when you went to the United States, how old were you for those 2 years?
I was 15, 16-ish, give or take.
Okay. So you came over for 2 years. And then how did you go from there to start, like, really educating yourself and start learning about the American real estate?
It was a bit of a journey. When I started working for the Israeli high tech as an engineer, after 1 year, I got really bored with my job. I was pretty good at it, but not challenging. Mm-hmm. You know, I was actually making good money as a salary and started saving. And I just started asking myself, is this it? You know, I was 24, 25, like, this is it. I'm going to work for the next 10, 15, 20 years, you know, long hours. And I saw my older cousins, uncles, you know, hardworking, you know, good quality, even good earners. And what do they have 15, 20 years later? A condo with a mortgage. How is that even possible that you're going to work for 15 years and all you have is a condo or maybe a house with a mortgage? It doesn't make any sense to me. I thought that this is not going to be my path. I knew what I don't want. I have my negative. This is not where I want to head. This is not the path I want to take. But I still didn't know what path I want to take. All of those tools that we have at our disposal today were not there. And I just felt that I started investing in stocks and in options, and I wasn't happy with the risk reward. And I just kept like a madman on a quest. I need to find my thing, my path. And I heard someone talk about U.S. you know, real estate, and kind of clicked with the root stories that I told you before. And everything I've learned throughout that lecture and asking and reading kind of clicked with my belief system, value system, risks in risk, you know, financial ability. It kind of clicked on so many levels that I thought, okay, this is my path. It took me probably a year and a half more until I actually did something, because back then I had zero support system around me, right? I had, you know, one place that I heard a lecture. I went once or twice more to hear again, but it was the same content. But there was no Facebook group. There was nothing around. Nobody did, you know, U.S. real estate around me. So I had no one to turn to as for advice. And, you know, the uncle, so to speak, the rich uncle, you know, bad uncle, whatever you want to call it. And I just got to the point that I asked myself, I remember the conversation, are you a walker or a talker? That was a conversation I had in myself probably 2001 or two. You know, I'm a walker. I'm going to do something about it. And I decided to pull the trigger. I had to bring a partner, my cousin, to buy the first one because I didn't have enough money. So I thought it's a good thing to do, to bring a partner risk-wise, but also that was compensating the funds that I need. I remember clearly after signing the documents for the closing and sending the funds, we went from the office in Tel Aviv, and both of us, we both signed the documents. And I remember the feeling, you know, in the elevator saying, oh my God, I literally have, you know, maybe like $100 in my bank account. That's it. $100 to my bank account. But at the same time, I had the job at the time, a steady job. I knew the next salary is coming up, in a few weeks. So I wasn't that nervous. And I also told myself, listen, I'm young enough to correct, right? If everything is catastrophic, I have plenty of time to rebuild. Nothing went catastrophic. But that was the feeling of a young person buying in. You know, my first property was in Phoenix. I knew of the name Phoenix. I had to look up on the map where Phoenix is. I bought completely sight unseen, you know, from the builder on a dirt. It was crazy for me.
How did you find it?
So I worked with this company that was marketing, you know, real estate investments. And they were the one who funneling. And honestly, back then, pretty much looked nice on paper with photos, even in black and white. I was so out of my element in terms of how to analyze it. It looked nice. The numbers made sense. You know, if I can compare the amount of due diligence I do today on a single property that I'm considering, not to mention buying.
Yeah.
I probably did 5, maybe 10% of the analysis I do today on that house. By the way, it was a great investment. Great investment. Uh-huh. But the amount of due diligence that I do today is 100 times more detailed on so many levels.
That was a single family home? Is that correct?
Single family in a nice community, you know, cookie cutter. It doesn't get more cookie cutter than that.
And so you were buying it and fixing and flipping it, or you were buying it and holding it and placing a tenant in? What was your strategy after you acquired it?
My plan was buy and hold, and, you know, for many years. Flipping, I only started doing maybe 7 years. I've done tens of, if not hundreds of rental properties before I built up the courage to do flips.
Okay. So your partners had the faith in you to be like, this guy did his due diligence in Phoenix. Where's Phoenix? It's right there. Okay.
Yeah.
what can you show us? Oh, these black and white photos. Okay. Yeah, this looks great. Here's some money. Let's go. All right. Yeah. For sure.
I'm serious. It was pretty much maybe just a little bit more than what you were just saying.
All right, cool. So you started doing that, right? So you got your first deal underway. You started gaining some confidence, And how long did you live in Tel Aviv investing in American real estate?
Probably for the next 2 years. This was my first one. And then I did two small kind of syndication, like when I was a passive investor, one in San Antonio and one in Miami. And, you know, they probably got our money back plus, you know, a little bit. So we weren't that much successful. But in 2004, I moved to the States. So that's 2002 was the first deal. 2004, we moved to the States. You know, it's crazy. I had one clear goal in mind. I'm going to do real estate in the States, right? I didn't know anyone. You know, I spoke English, probably back then even more broken English than I sound today, probably more bulky. I think I polished it a little bit over the years, but not close, you know, not even close to what it is today. A lot of confidence, and not a lot of money. You know, let's just say it's not one of those stories where I came with 20 bucks in my wallet, but it wasn't a lot more. Let's just put it this way. I'm not coming from a, you know, wealthy background, you know, father military, mom worked two jobs, you know, kind of nice middle class, you know, kid with a latch, you know, latchkey pretty much all my life. Worked from a very young age myself because my parents said, listen, you want to have whatever, ride horses? Yeah. This is a you know, benefit from us. We can afford it. That was fine. You know, I was a hard worker. And then I started duplicating what I did with the Phoenix house and the other two and start putting tracks in place and start working with investors, enabling them to do, you know, what I'm doing anyway for my own portfolio, but also for them. I will say that the property in Phoenix fueled a few more purchases because that was 2002 when I purchased. I remember the numbers, it's crazy. I purchased this in 2002 for 127,800 or just about 128,000. And it got to be at the peak, which we all know about the peak. It was a little bit over 300. So that house bought me four more houses. By the time, by 2007, I managed to pull out money, buy more. So that kind of fueled. And other ones fueled other ones. So that was fun to see, but the actual got to be much better than the plan.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
When you came over to the States, did you come over on a business visa or how did you go about coming over?
Yeah. I had a visa to come in and stay at the client and work at the client site. But then I applied for, I can't remember, there was another executive visa, which someone sponsored me and I applied for that. I got that visa in place very quickly. It cost a lot of money, a little bit of stress, but we got it, you know, all, you know, taken care of as quickly as we can. I always wanted to be, everything, you know, as it should be, you know, organized. And then the minute I could apply for a green card, I applied for a green card. You know, my paperwork for applying for citizenship were ready 4.5 years, ready 4.5 years to submit from when I got my green card, which is when you can apply, at least back then, to citizenship. And I applied, literally to the day. I always knew that, you know, legalization always takes time and they always make it
difficult.
Harder than, you know, it's getting harder and harder. But, you know, that's a whole, you know, a whole different podcast.
For sure. And then where did you move to when you first moved here? Did you move to Phoenix or we moved to California? Where did you want to go?
I had a dream. I had the same dream like all anybody who lives east to California has that dream. It's called the California Dreaming. I got infected. I've never been to California before. And that was very clean. My wife wanted to go to Chicago. And I told her, ain't going to happen. Weather in Chicago, ain't going to happen. There's only one place, and we actually flew to San Francisco. That's where we wanted to go first.
Wow. And is that where you're at right now, in San Francisco?
No, I was there the Bay Area, for 10 years, and I moved about 6 years ago down to Southern California, so not that far. I'm in Southern California now, yeah. Beautiful Orange County, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I lived in San Diego for 2 years, and I lived in L.A., in L.A. County for 6 years. Yeah. So not Orange County, but very familiar with the area.
Yeah.
You know, you started gaining some confidence. You started scaling your portfolio. You're doing buy and hold strategy. Is that correct for long term?
Primarily buy and hold. Right. And a lot of it has to do, a lot of the processes that I, you know, systems and processes I put in place were from the get-go set up as a scalable, because I knew I'm going to work with investors and help them But my business is I work with investors and help them run the same tracks that I always keep, you know, putting in terms of where to go, who to work, how to look at a property, how to analyze all those systems and processes. Before I had my first client, I was already putting the foundation for a skyscraper.
Yeah, for sure. So what are you looking for as far as like investment criteria? So single family home in between what price range or what markets, like what are you looking for as investment criteria is concerned?
So over the years, you know, I would say we've been to single family homes primarily, mainly 100 to 250,000-ish. You know, it kind of changes with the metro and with the times. 3-4 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, you know, 3 bathrooms, give or take. Middle class, upper middle class, middle class, lower middle class. You can almost say that my formula has not been, you know, financial formula as much as it's been the resilient, always. Especially it was kind of refined after the crash of, you know, 10 plus 12 years ago. That was really refined back then, you know, after that crash. But for me, it was always to measure not just the financial ROI, but the time or energy or effort, resilient risk ROI. People don't do that. For me, it's critical, and I don't want to say I'm glad, but came April of this year, I could tell my formula is being put to the, you know, to the test, the resilient, the stress test, and it's passed. It passed with a flying color. It passed, and amazingly, we had very little issues with collections of rent. You know, not more than normal, maybe one or few cases more than one, which we quickly, you know, sorted out. I have zero complaints from my clients calling, like, you know, like, what do I do? Am I none of those things. You know, at first it was like, okay, April, then May, same thing, then June, same thing, then July, same thing. Now August, the same thing. You know, it's resilient. That's good.
And what do you find as far as like, you know, you obviously said you've done a stress test. Where do people usually get caught out in with some problems as far as real estate investing?
I think that people underestimate like all those things that I said. A lot of investors, they are attracted to the cash cow, you know, cheap property in the, let's just say, not so good part of or the metro. And on paper, those properties, you know, it's not, I'm not saying they're bad properties, you know, you just have to have the appetite for it. I never had that appetite. See, like you, I want to live somewhere, whatever that somewhere is. I want to live somewhere that it's not next to the property. I have no intention hovering over toilets whatsoever. I've never hovered over in toilets or fixed any leak. That's not my intention. I have no intentions of doing that. But I understand that in order to avoid, I call it the noise in the system. If I buy an old property, like 1940, cheap or not as cheap as it may be, in a not so good part of town with the tenants that are going to be, regardless of the COVID, are financially challenged, you know, that is a recipe for issues because you're going to have more maintenance. You're going to have more issues with the tenants. I've been there. I've done that too. And the minute you hear a leak as an owner, and I've worked with so many owners, and I know that's usually the case. When you hear a leak happening in your house, when the property manager calls you and says there is the kitchen is leaking and we're sending a plumber over to fix it, which is a very small thing, by the time I hear that message, it's actually the house is flooded. Every 1,000 miles between the house and me amplifies the issue by 10, right? So 2,000 miles is even worse. So, hey, Mr. Owner, there is a leak. We're taking care of it. Oh my God, the house is flooded, right? You can't help it. Now, the crazy thing is, the owners, Mike, and sometimes, you know, my clients too, the next day they would call the property manager to make sure the leak is fixed. And the property manager is not responding, or call or email or text, or whatever. He's not responding immediately. Here's their immediate conclusion. If the property manager doesn't respond, it means that only two things are happening. Option one, he got drowned in the flood and he's done, right? Literally. Option two, he ran to Mexico with my money. I don't know which money here, but those are the options people see in their mind. The fact that he's actually there, the fact that he's with the kid at the doctor, something at school, something at work, that doesn't exist. There's only a catastrophe. And the reason I'm saying all of this, when you have a house that generates issue and noise all the time, by the fourth issue on the third month, you're going to be certain that the property manager is screwing you. And that has nothing to do with the property manager is amazing or not. It's possible that they're screwing you, but that doesn't have to be the case. But when you have four issues in 3 months that are each of them costing you $200, there's only one conclusion. The property manager is taking advantage of me, right? The fact that this is an old house, problematic tenant has nothing to do with it. I've done everything perfect. It's got to be the property manager. Now, this is something that I want to have minimum noise in my life for me and my clients. When you live in Thailand, the last thing you want to do when you have multiple properties, you don't want those phone calls, right? Even if someone is taking care of it, it's annoying. It's annoying here. It's annoying here. You know, we don't want it. So those cash cows on paper tend to not really produce that golden milk as we suspected, unless you're going to put more time and energy and effort into it. So if you want to do that, that's fine, but you got to be ready for that. I'm not. I want quiet. I want my ideal scenario, buy and forget for my clients and myself. I never want to hear about this property ever. That's my ideal scenario, right? Mm-hmm. And I only want to collect the rent. That's it. Obviously, it's not, you know, it's not life, right? We know that's not how life operates, but that's my aspiration. Buy and forget.
For sure. And, you know, I think you have a very clear indication of what you want from the real estate. So, you know, a lot of people say, I want a cash flowing property in a good area, right? Well, like, what does that really entail? Where do you want to look? And it sounds like you've kind of narrowed down your niche and know what you specifically want is like, listen, I want to buy the real estate. I don't want to go deal with tenants, toilets, and termites. Like, I don't want any of that. I want to set it, forget it. I want to be able to sleep at night. And that's kind of your investment strategy and exactly what you're trying to achieve. What would you recommend to somebody that's looking to probably start scaling their portfolio? Maybe they've done a deal not in Phoenix. Maybe they've done a deal in Austin, Texas or something, and they're looking to scale in their portfolio. What would you recommend to that person?
So if they're scaling, that means they're already owning. If they're owning, I would, first of all, not rush to another metro and maybe try to go deeper, if possible, in the one that you're already investing in. Because a lot of people think like, oh, I'm going to diversify. And they don't realize when you diversify, that means another set of team, right? Another property management, maybe another realtor. Every time you add more people to your virtual organization, portfolio kind of organization, empire, then that's more noise in the system. So don't run to diversify. You already know that area. You probably have people that you trust and you can, you know, scale that. That's easier than just starting all over in another metro. Plus, if you travel, when we go back to traveling, it's much easier to travel to one area instead of maybe two or three or four. So don't rush out to diversify that quickly. There's a cost to it. You're in a market that it's already kind of saturated numbers. Obviously, the reality, you know, is you have to maybe go to another area. And then I would ask myself, you know, people, from my experience, usually run and start looking at properties. And I'll say, hang on a second. Take a minute or two or five with yourself and just, I like to literally write down. What worked well for you? What can you tell worked well from you, you know, in your current investment and what didn't? Like, do that learning curve with yourself. It's not going to take much. Maybe you're going to do it over a few days of kind of thinking about it, but just write it down. And then that will help you fine-tune your formula when you move to the next house or the next area. And say, okay, I got to watch out of those five things. And this is really work. You know, the realtor is actually, is not a one-man show. Is a, you know, is a team. The property management, you know, there's so much. Try to kind of come up with those conclusions that what worked well and what didn't and learn from them. You will position yourself to make every next investment a better one.
For sure. So yeah, basically refine your process where you are, start developing that, get that fully up and running and be operational, and then focus on another market. Don't spread your blanket too thin and then not be able to be a successful investor.
And I think it's counterintuitive for people. I hear it all the time. Oh, so I should buy, I should diversify. No, maybe, but not necessarily. Don't rush there. Just I've done that. I'm speaking from experience. I bought in the first 5 years of, you know, 2004 to 2008, my goal was, you know, to have five properties. I had 10 properties by that time. So I doubled what I was planning on doing. And that was probably spread in seven different markets. And it took a toll to manage and to supervise and to track. Even when I work with property manager, it still requires the overhead management, you know, controlling, so to speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. I love it. Yeah. I think you have a great story, you know, coming from Tel Aviv, and, you know, a lot of people can take a lot of valuable information from this. You know, a lot of people think that it's hard to start investing and where do they even begin? But here you've come to the United States, right? You started developing, building out your own process and really started, you know, acquiring and start scaling your business. So I think there's a lot of knowledge to be had from this episode. Danny, I want to close it out with the three closing questions. First question that we have here for you is, what is a pain point or weakness you face right now in your business?
Pain point in the business, you know, I would say, it's kind of funny. I think that's what also brought us together. I always look at my peers in the industry, and I am honestly a bit, you know, jealous, because I think that even people with less experience than I do, you know, I've done close to 5,000 rental properties. That's quite an extensive, you know, experience. I don't know a lot of people that can say that. And one of my biggest challenges is, how do I put that message out to people so they can, you know, interact and engage with us, so we can help them? You know, we bring a lot of our good experience and bad experience, and I have plenty of bad experience, and I share it with all the investors who work with us, and I want to share it with more people. That's a challenge. That's a frustration, I should say, if I'm being honest.
For sure. I mean, you're doing good so far, my friend. You're doing good so far. So
thank you.
I won't worry too much. All right. Second question is, what is your favorite book to regift?
It's actually not a business book.
That's okay.
Mr. Vertigo by Paul Auster. One of my favorite books in all times. I can always go back to it.
What is that about?
It's about a kid who joins, I can't remember, was it dad or an uncle or an adult, and they go through, you know, America many, many years ago, in the U.S. many, many years ago. They kind of travel around the country, and he teaches the kid how to literally float, you know, like vertigo. Right.
Yeah.
And it's something magical about that kind of connection with the dad. I can't remember what the dad, and how they go about, you know, training him to float. Literally. I mean, literally floating. Yeah. So it's it's a very nice story. Yeah.
Okay, cool. That sounds interesting. I'm going to have to possibly check that out. All right. Third question for you. If you were to live abroad anywhere for 1 year, where would you live and why? And it cannot be a place that you've already lived.
Okay, fair enough. I wouldn't say Israel. I think Portugal. Portugal is kind of always been in my mind. On one hand, it is the simplistic version of Spain. It's on the sea. I think I have family photos or postcards from Portugal when my family was there, my sisters and my mom. And it kind of stuck. I'm talking about 30 years back.
For sure.
Portugal would be kind of my go-to place.
Nice. And Danny, what's the best place for people to find you online and consume some more of your content?
So my social media online, alter ego is Simply Do It. Simply Do It. So if you do Danny and Simply Do It online, I'm on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and pretty much everywhere. So if you just click, you Simply Do It, I'm sure in real estate or real estate investing, you will find me. I mean, I put a lot of content and out there quite a lot. Yeah,
for sure. And I love the name too, but like when we first connected, I was like, simply do it. I was like, that's very easy to remember. Simply do it.
Yeah.
Very
cool. That's one
of
the reasons I like it. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, very cool. Well, awesome. Well, thank you very much for being on this episode. I know the audience will take a lot of value from it, and we'll catch you on the next go around, Danny.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the time and having me as a guest.
Thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I hope you guys got some tremendous value there from it. But if you guys are looking to take your real estate career to the next level and looking to partner with us on your next real estate deal, please head on over to www.matthewbaltzell.com and sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get our latest deal flows and our up-to-date real estate investing information, tidbits, and tips there for you. All right, guys. Catch you on the next go around. Peace. Are you a busy real estate professional who is looking to build their authority online as a featured podcast guest, but lacks the time to do so? Then head on over to elitepodcastbookings.com today to schedule a free consultation with the number one real estate podcast booking service, and you'll receive a limited time offer of 25% off.